Welcome, 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 Access Cleveland. Welcome to the show today. We're talking here with the author, a producer. That's what you do when you make a play. You produce it and then you put it all together. You got to give it up for Nina Domain. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. So, man, let's talk about it, man. Your mama. Oh, man. Tell us about the book here. Tell us about this journey.
Absolutely.
And it took the production, was 7 years in the making?
Yeah. So Cleveland Public Theater, which is producing the show this time, had a series in the past called Big Box.
And okay.
It's now called Entry Point.
Okay.
And it's a new development series.
Okay.
So
okay.
So plays in different stages of development get to showcase and put it before an audience because sometimes you can't. Like, you get it to a place and then you just need people to hear it.
So
you
right.
So, I performed it in 2011.
Okay. Okay.
The Box series. And then we took it to the New York International Fringe Festival.
Uh-oh.
And then we came back to Cleveland and did it in the main stage season at CPT. And then I had two more kids.
Took a quick tour break.
Right.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Did a lot of things in between.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we took it to the Hollywood Fringe Festival.
Look at you. Congratulations.
Thank you. We're doing well.
Yeah.
CPT asked us if we would come back and gave us a very full production this time.
Yeah.
So this is the first time I have a full set.
Wow.
I have a live musician, percussionist.
Okay.
Bill Ransom.
Yeah, I see that here. Yeah.
Choreographer Kenya Woods.
Kenya Woods, you got on here. All right.
And my director Nathan Henry. I mean, it's a wonderful team of people. Solo show is never solo. It's always 5 to 12 people in the background.
Yeah. So how does that feel, as you mentioned, how it starts, and then you went around touring, and the fact that they want it back, they want it again, there's a demand for it on your work?
I mean, it's very fulfilling because of what this work is and what it's about. I didn't write it initially. When I first started writing it, I thought I was writing a hilarious comedy about how funny my kids are.
Okay.
And my original co-collaborator, Kathy Hartenstein, started to notice that there were certain little stories that I kind of half referenced, and she would ask me, well, "What's that about?"
You sped through it.
Yeah. Go home and write that monologue, and then
yeah,
do that. And so what the story it evolved what it is now, which is a story about losing my mother, gaining a stepmother, and then becoming a mother. And you know everything that involves. And so my sister sent me a book the first time I was working on it, you know, back in 2011, called Motherless Daughters.
Okay.
And the woman that wrote the book, I believe her name is Hope Edelman, interviewed 10,000 women who had lost their mother. So it's all different circumstances, different ages, some natural causes, some violently, some it was just a surprise. We didn't know it was coming. But what emerged for her was the understanding that there were patterns of behavior amongst that grief community that were very specific to women who had lost their mothers. And so because of the way that we lost our mother, we were thinking the particular way that we're grieving is very unique because people don't have this particular experience. And what I realized is, well, that's a lie. And that knowledge right there just healed something that I didn't understand needed healing. And I was like, oh, everybody got to know this because
right.
You're thinking they're by themselves, and they're not.
And there's a lot of people. They just don't talk about it. It doesn't get publicized.
Right.
It's not a lot of therapy. Or we don't know where to go.
Right.
And you lost your mother to suicide.
Yes.
Okay.
And very specific.
At what age?
I was 4.
Okay.
My sister was 8 months.
Oh, wow.
And she had something called postpartum psychosis.
Okay.
Which is different from postpartum depression. If it is not treated, it almost always ends in suicide or infanticide. So they kill themselves or they kill the baby. If it is treated, though, properly diagnosed and treated, it has an 85% cure rate.
Okay.
And so that piece of knowledge as well. Like, you know, as I got older and began to understand what really happened to her and started looking for information, mm-hmm. and when I started writing the play and doing, you know, my playwright duties.
Right.
My dramaturgy and getting the research yeah. and everything was like, you know, it hits 1 in every 1,000 women.
Mm.
So pretty much any famous story in the news that you can think of, you know, she put her children in the car and drove into the lake. She did this, and, you know, that's just like, how could a person do that?
Mm-hmm.
Almost every one of those women had postpartum psychosis.
Mm.
And so I was like, well, this is another thing
yeah.
people need to know about, because this is also a form of that something that is contributing to the maternal mortality rate, which mm-hmm. has a lot of attention.
Which is big in Ohio.
Yeah, and in the African-American yeah. community. So it's like, you know, because we don't often think about, if they died during childbirth mm-hmm. or immediately following, we attribute that death
mm-hmm.
to the birth, labor, and delivery process. But if it happens sometime after, we don't necessarily connect those two things.
What are those signs, too? Or some?
I'm not a doctor.
Right.
But what I'll say that I know from the research I've done, some things that are common amongst the cases that I've read about,
mm-hmm.
and my mother, what I know of what people have told me, when the woman says, you know, like, I felt like I was observing myself do things that I couldn't stop myself from doing,
mm.
like I could see them happening, and I knew that there was something off about that, but I
yeah.
couldn't stop it, and I didn't know how to stop it. It appears to be postpartum depression at first only. And then the behaviors just start to get strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like they behave in a way that is completely out of character for who people know them to be.
Okay.
But check on your people.
Yes.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, we don't get a book that says how to do it.
Right.
We have all of the, you know.
But if you see something that's out the ordinary, if you see your family members seem to, well, that's mm-hmm. that behavior is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say something, look into it versus just ignoring it.
Yeah.
And then you got into acting. So
yes, I did.
how has that been, and how did that part come?
How did that part come?
Yeah.
Well, part of that story is told in the play.
Okay.
But a lot of that grew out of needing to express myself,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, not knowing how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And also wanting to understand, like, I've always been intensely curious. And I wanted to understand why people do the things that they do. And that's really what acting is. It's the study of human behavior.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
like, why does the character make this choice? What's her mm-hmm. motivation?
Right.
And, you know, I started acting in New Orleans, where I'm from,
mm-hmm.
At Dillard University. And my mother's family's from here. My mm-hmm. father's family is from New Orleans. And I had an internship after I graduated from undergrad at the Cleveland Playhouse.
Okay.
And met my husband and fell in love and
okay.
followed me to grad school.
Okay.
And then we came back to Cleveland. So we had our first daughter while we were still in school.
Okay.
And you know, didn't want to move to a huge market without our support system.
Mm-hmm.
We both had a lot of family here. And Cleveland, the Cleveland theater community has been incredibly just kind to me. I've been able to say that I have a career in theater because of the Cleveland arts community.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And so tell everybody, you know, how exciting was the making of this play? Because I know it had to be exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, this current version of it,
mm-hmm.
I finally feel...
The remix? Is it like the remix?
It's like the remix.
Okay.
It is the remix. Your mama remix. It is, you know, the team is really what makes it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing all of their creativity
mm-hmm.
come to the fore as they try to help me bring this story to life.
Right.
It lives in my head. I know the story.
Right.
It's like, so how can we make these things come to life for her? You know?
Mm-hmm.
You see the play, it's not all crying
mm-hmm.
by any means, you know. There's your mama jokes. There's
mm-hmm. yeah. You see, when I read the title, I was like, your mama.
Exactly. And there is, for the listeners, you know, there's a section where I do the Yamama jokes. Change a joke out.
Okay.
If audience members give me a good joke,
yeah,
use it.
Okay, okay.
Because it has that freedom in the scene to do that. So, you know, there's that. And then one of the really exciting parts with Bill playing the percussion live, parts of the show that I didn't realize, like this, I have to do an extra kind of level of work to make sure I'm not just up here having my own therapy session, but telling a story and I'm giving the people the art that they deserve.
Right.
The parts that were really hard are now fun in a different way.
Okay.
I have that music carrying me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there are other parts that are just fun because he's a genius at what he does.
And that's something what you just said, when you have to take your story to make sure it touches everybody, you know, that they relate, that they get something, you know what I mean, that they're healed through the process as well. So that's when you know you're on that next level.
That's what we try to do.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite playwright is Lorraine Hansberry. And people would ask her about Raisin in the Sun and you know, why she wanted to take this quote-unquote kind of regular black family and write this story. And she said, you know, we find the universal through the lens of the particular. And if I can tell this story truthfully about this man and his family and his time, you will find something in there that is authentic to you because I've told the truth of this story.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's what's up. So I want you guys to get over to the theaters, man. Nina, so give us the show times.
Absolutely. So the show...
And well, we can get tickets.
Starts at October 11th.
Okay.
And goes through October the 27th. You can either go online, www.cptonline.org to get tickets, or you can call 216-631-2727 extension 501 for tickets. Also, I just got to put it out there.
What's that?
CPT does this really special thing called Free Beer Friday.
Oh really? Oh, wow. Any peanuts there too?
But that's a fun thing that they do. So you know, come on out for that.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of different programs. So call the box office. Don't let finances deter you. Ask a question and you can find out something fun.
See? Hint, hint, hint.
You know, the show is also, it's quick. It's 75 minutes.
Oh, okay. You know? Yeah.
I'll hold you there all day.
Yeah.
You
know? How many shows you do a day? Two?
No, just one.
Okay. So, oh, don't put that on me.
At least not right now.
Okay.
At least not right now.
Well, Nina, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, buddy.
And how can they reach you on social media?
Absolutely. On Instagram, you can follow me at Nina Domain. I'll spell it. NINADOMINGUE. Same on Facebook at Nina Domain. On Twitter, I'm The Real Nina D. Glow.
All right. Yo mama. Make sure you guys check it out. We got more coming up on the show.